cartoon that I've seen about Jesus and his disciples, about the beginning of this gospel. Jesus is saying, you need to forgive, not seven times, but I tell you, seven times, 70 times seven. And one of the disciples facepalms and says, great, now I not only have to forgive, I have to do math. For a few of us, the worst part might be the math. But I think for most of us, most of the time, it's the forgiving that's the hard part. In Jesus' parable in the beginning, the king and the slave are alike. Both of them are thinking in terms of keeping score, profit, loss, debits, credits. And the slave is in a heap of trouble. The amount he owes is something like $10 million. There's no way, no how, ever that he could pay that off. And so, according to the rights of slaveholders of the time, the slave and his family and his possessions are sold. Profit and loss, debits and credits, keeping score. With people instead of dollars or talents or denarii. And here's where the two of them begin to differ. The slave falls on his knees, pleads with the king, and says he will pay back what he owes. But that's impossible. No way. Does the slave think the king is an easy mark? That he can't do the math and figure out pretty quickly how empty that promise of repayment really is? But that's the way the world works, right? Accounts payable and receivable. Profit, loss. The slave can't envision any other possibility except make an absurd promise to pay what he can't possibly. Now, keep in mind this is a parable, and parables are supposed to shock us into seeing the world differently. The word parable comes from to throw alongside, and that's what they show us, a kind of alternate reality. What makes it all the more remarkable is that Jesus, who didn't have much good to say about rich folks, tells a parable where the king, the rich guy, gets it. So the king is all at once moved to compassion, and actually that word compassion is a bit wimpy. It really means moved to the guts. He has a life-changing experience of enlightenment, and so he doesn't just grant forbearance to his slave who owes him quite so much money. He entirely wipes out the debt. Gone. Poof. The debt is extinguished. It's dead. And the slave literally doesn't believe it. Perhaps he thinks the king is so rich to be stupid about math and thinks he'll actually be paid back. Maybe he thinks he put one over on a rich guy who probably deserves it for being rich. The slave cannot fathom why someone would just wipe out an enormous debt like that, or what it might have cost the king to do so. So he leaves the room and immediately puts the screws on another slave who owes him some money, maybe $100. Despite having had his own debt completely wiped out, killed off, he's still keeping score, keeping tracks of the debits and the credits, the profit and the loss. Unlike the king who's completely given up the profit-loss scorekeeping, the slave is still thinking and living and acting in exactly the same way. Despite this great gift that he's been given, the debt of a debt that he couldn't possibly pay. It's like he just can't fathom what happens, so he's blind to it. And so, he receives exactly what profit, loss, scorekeeping mindset promises. Justice. What he deserves. What he chose. Others tell the king about his behavior toward the slave was $100, and the king reverses his decision to forgive the $10 million and orders that he be tortured until he pays it. This parable can sound kind of scary, actually. Does God really really condemn us to torture if we don't forgive? What if we have trouble with forgiving? What about when we've been really, really badly hurt by someone's actions? What if it's messed up our whole life? Someone's really hurt us. A parent, or a spouse, or a child. Someone who caused the death of a loved one. A teacher, or a boss, or a job. Or someone who has died, who you won't ever be able to confront. What about when we really want to be rid of the burden of holding a grudge? It can be exhausting, and one can feel really stuck. But we just keep coming back to it over and over again. Does God hold that against us? Condemn us to torture because we just can't forgive? Or are we the ones doing the torturing of ourselves? Because like a slave, we just can't stop keeping score. We just can't seem to live differently. We can't seem to let those debts die. We can't seem to see any possible alternate reality. The Lord's Prayer, which, by the way, if you do the daily office in the prayer book, you end up praying it 5 times in the day. The Lord's Prayer, we say, forgive us our trespasses or sins or debts as we forgive those who trespass against us. It seems to me that this might be descriptive rather than prescriptive, that we're forgiven, but we can only really accept that forgiveness if we pass it on, if we keep making every effort to do likewise. God's forgiveness isn't limited. Our ability to accept it is, especially when we continue to hold on to the wrongs done to us. Now, to be clear, forgiving is not the same as forgetting. And it may not lead to a continuing relationship with the one who wronged us. Nor is it about pretending it was no big deal or being a doormat. Rather, forgiving is not allowing the past to direct the future. It's a gift given to the offender. Not for their sake, but for ours. If you're anything like me, forgiving others can be kind of hard. I'd much rather hang on to the hurt, to that righteous indignation, sometimes even to the idea of getting even. But at a minimum, I want everyone to know exactly how wrong the person who harmed me was. And maybe have them grovel just a little bit. And therein lies the problem. Because there are some times when a genuine heartfelt apology is possible and very healing when it occurs. But there's many times where this is just not happening. And we can get stuck there. As 12-step groups sometimes say, when I hang on to a hurt, I'm just letting whoever wronged me continue to live rent-free in my head. So what do we do? Well, the hurt from being somehow wronged is a feeling, an emotion, and one can't just decide not to feel it. And I try very hard not to lie to God about what I'm feeling, the one to whom all hearts are open, all desires known, and from whom no secrets are hidden. But God knows when we hurt, and you know, it's okay to say so in prayers. Even if we're angry with God for permitting whatever it was to occur. It isn't the first time, it won't be the last time that somebody's mad at God. And second, in those prayers, focus on the hurt, not on the indignation or sense of injustice. Emotions need to be attended to, but they don't need to be fed with resentment. Dealing with injustice may be important, but getting stuck in that kind of feedback loop of resentment doesn't help us forgive. Third, try praying for the person who wronged you. Yeah, I know that sounds really crazy, but just try it. Even if the best you can do is simply hold them before God. For me at first, it's often something along the lines of, okay, God, I can't right now do anything else but place that SOB in front of you. So I'm needing some help here. And then keep doing it. Over time, it does take time. One finds oneself able to do more. And when we're the ones offending, the one who needs forgiveness, well, for God's sake, and I mean that literally, let's not pretend it didn't happen, that we didn't do whatever our conscience is telling us was wrong or hurtful. Not lying to God is important, and so is not lying to ourselves. And let's also not pretend that it's just between me and God. The spiritual life is always cross-shaped. Yeah, vertical, ourselves and God, but horizontal with each other too. Both matter. That's why Jesus taught us to pray, "Our Father, forgive us our trespasses." It's not a solo endeavor. So if possible, we need to seek the forgiveness of the one we've wronged, and we need to pray for that person. And for ourselves, that we might follow in the way of our Lord Jesus. No maths required.